We're doing Shmuel, and David had married Michal, Shaul's daughter, and she really loved David, Michal bat Shaul. And Shaul gets scared of David. He sees that Hashem is with David, and that Hashem has left Shaul. And every time there was war, David was most successful among the generals against the Philistines. Shaul summons his son Yonatan and the other servants, and he says, we have to figure out how we're going to kill David. And Yonatan goes to David, and he tells him, you know, my father wants to kill you. Watch out, go hide, and I'll let you know in the morning what's going on. And tomorrow morning, I'll go with my father to the field. I'll speak to my father about you, and I'll see what he says, and then I'll tell you. So the next morning, Yonatan speaks to David, to Shaul, his father, and he says to him, your servant David, you shouldn't sin against him, the king, because he's done nothing wrong to you. And whatever he does is actually to your benefit. He risked his life, and he killed Goliath, the Philistine. And all of Israel was saved through him, and you were also happy. So why should you kill him? Why should you transgress? Why would you kill someone innocent? Why would you kill David, who has done nothing wrong? And Shmuel listens, and he says, I swear by Hashem who is alive, he won't be killed. Yonatan summons David, and he tells him what goes on, and Yonatan brings David back to the palace. Everything continues as though nothing happened. War continues. And again, David is victorious against the Philistines. He has a tremendous victory. Shaul is at home. After the war, David comes back and he's playing music for Shaul. And Shaul holds a spear in his hand. And he tries to hit David, and David bends over and he just misses, and David runs away. He leaves the palace, he runs back home. Shaul sends his men to David's house, and he tells them, you'll bring him, guard the house, bring him in the morning. And Michal tells David, if you don't get out of here tonight, tomorrow you're dead. So she lets him out the window, and David runs away.
Where was she?
She was in the house. He came to the house.
His house?
No, David's house.
Okay.
The guards were standing in front of the front door to make sure David doesn't leave. She let him out the back window, and David ran away. Now, David had created this figure that looked like him, so that when Michal would miss him, she'd look at his picture, this figure. And Michal put it in bed, and she put some goat skin on top, and she covered it with a garment as though there was someone lying there. Shaul sends the messengers to bring David before him. Michal says he's ill. She wants to buy time. David should get further and further away. Shaul sends his messengers to see David. And he says, bring him here in his bed. He is to be executed. So the messengers come into the house. They go to the bed. And they see that David's not there. There's the goat skin. There's this figure. Michal is brought before Shaul. And he asks her, why did you deceive me so? Why did you send my enemy away and escape? And Michal says, you married me off to a gangster. What do you mean? He said he'd kill me otherwise. What are you doing marrying me off to such a guy? So that's only a girl can do that, right? Yell back. So David escapes, and he comes to Shmuel, and he tells him what's going on. He and Shmuel go to sit in a place called Nayot. So today we actually have a place in Israel called Nayot. Our sages say this was not the name of a place. Nayot is a term for teaching. They sat and learned Torah together. David escaped to Shmuel, and he learned with him. And the pasuk says, Shaul heard that David was by Nayot Birama. Now the word Nayot could come from the term, from the word Nave, which means a home, an abode, a resting place. And our sages say that David and Shmuel were having their last learning session together. Shmuel is going to pass away shortly after this, and David is learning with Shmuel how you decide where is the proper place to build a Beit HaMikdash. They are learning and reviewing their tradition. They are learning and analyzing the geography of Jerusalem. And they are coming up with a conclusion, where will David build the Beit HaMikdash? So David is on the run. He's just lost his wife. His father-in-law wants him dead. He's on the run. Shmuel told him he'd be king, but that doesn't seem to be on the horizon right now. And David is busy trying to figure out how he could honor Hashem. Where will he place Hashem's castle? Shaul sends messengers to bring David. Shmuel has his students prophesizing next to him. And the first group of messengers come. And they start getting a prophetic vision, and they're disinterested with taking David, because when you get that level of clarity, so you're not interested. That's the concept we discussed this past week in Parshat Baalotcha from the Ran, that sometimes even if a person isn't worthy themselves of prophecy or enlightenment, if they're standing next to someone else who is, then they can be affected by the prophetic vision that lands on that person. And so Shaul's first set of messengers start prophesizing. So Shaul hears that his first messengers aren't coming back. They've joined the prophetic group. So he sends a second set of messengers, and then a third set of messengers. And when he sees that all these messengers get prophetic vision, so Shaul is longing for that connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam again. So he too goes, and when he's directed to Shmuel, he too merits to get prophecy, and he takes off his clothing, which either means literally or it means his royal clothing, that when he's coming to learn by Shmuel, he's going to come like a regular student. The heirs of royalty are for when you're in the palace, but when you're in front of your Rebbe, then all of that's irrelevant. And he is learning before Shmuel that day and that night. And he has once more in his life that experience which he had when he first became king of prophetic vision. So Shaul comes close to Shmuel, and again he is elevated. This is a concept that's important. Try to connect to big people, even if they're not prophets and you won't get prophecy through them. But we learn from their traits. We when we're next to big people, we become bigger. We look at life differently. All of life looks different. And so it's important to try and connect to people who inspire you, people who you feel when you're close to them, you're a different person. I have teachers that just when being next to them, I know the answer without... you're in their presence and suddenly life seems clearer. David runs, and he meets up with his good friend Yonatan, Jonathan, and he says to him, what have I done? Tell me, have I done anything willfully? Have I done anything by mistake that your father wants me dead? So Yonatan says, no way, my father wouldn't do anything without talking to me. Why do you think my father would hide from me if he intends to kill you? And David swears, and he says, your father knows that you like me. And that's why he doesn't want you to know. He doesn't want to pain you. But I swear by Hashem that I was a footstep away from death. Yonatan says to David, whatever you want, I'll do. David says, tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh. And ordinarily, the king has a feast. This is one of the sources for the concept that on Rosh Chodesh, we're supposed to have a special meal. I'll go hide in the field until the 2 days of Rosh Chodesh pass. From here, some of the commentaries infer that they had a tradition going back to Moshe, how to calculate which month would have, the new moon would have 2 days and which would have 1 day. We know that the lunar cycle is 29 and a half days, so sometimes the new moon appears after the 29th day and then sometimes after the 30th day. The lunar month, being that it's actually 29 and a half, so when do you see the new moon? Well, that depends on the month. But here you see David anticipated that it would take 3 days. He says, tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh, we'll talk on the third day. So he knew there would be 2 days Rosh Chodesh. So you see, he knew to anticipate it. So from here, Rabbeinu Hananel and other early commentaries infer that long before we established a calendar, right, there was a rabbi named Hillel, not the famous Tana Hillel. There was a Rabbi Hillel in the days of the Gemara, a late Amora, who compiled, who arranged our calendar. So Rabbi Hillel arranged the calendar we use till today. But what about a millennium earlier, in the days of David HaMelech? So here you see, in the days of David HaMelech, it seems they also knew when the new moon would come, 1 day, 2 days, etc. He says, your father is going to ask you, where's David? And you'll tell him, I asked you for permission to go to my family. We have a family celebration, and the whole family's getting together. So if your father hears that and he says, great, I'm happy, you should have a good time, then you know everything's okay, I'm in peace. But if you see your father getting upset that I went to be with my family, you should know that your father wants me dead. It's over. And be kind with me. We made a pact, you and I. You made me promise. And so, if I've done something wrong on purpose against your father, so you could kill me. You don't even have to bring me to your father. Yonatan says, God forbid. If I know that my father wants you dead, I'll let you know right away. David asks Yonatan, he says, you might be followed. Your father knows we're friends. It's very possible that he will try to follow where you go. How are you going to let me know? Yonatan says to David, well, right now we shouldn't be talking here. Let's go out into the field and I'll tell you the plan. Yonatan says to David, I swear by Hashem, the next 2 days I will try to find out diligently what my father's intentions are. And then I'll let you know. But I promise by Hashem, such bad things should happen to me if I'm not honest and reveal it to you. If you're in danger, I will tell you and you should go in peace. And I bless you that just as Hashem was with my father, he should be with you. And I beg you that you should be kind to me just as I'm trying to be kind to you. And as you succeed against your enemies, so be kind to my family. And Yonatan makes David promise, and Yonatan prays that Hashem gives David success against his enemies. Yonatan is doing something very smart. Yonatan knows that David is going to be the next king. He senses that. And so Yonatan wants to ensure that David doesn't annihilate his family. It's the most natural thing for David to do. He says, remember the field my father and I were standing by? The last time you thought my father wanted you dead, you go hide there. And I'm going to go with my lad and practice my archery. I'll shoot arrows. And I'll send the lad to gather the arrows. And when the lad goes, if I tell him the arrows are further away, keep going. The arrows were shot further away. So then you should know, it's a sign for you, keep going. God has sent you, you should be successful and leave. But if I tell him, come closer, so you should know that that means there's peace, you should come and reveal yourself. May Hashem bear witness that you be faithful to me in our pact. David will break this pact by mistake, and Hashem will pay him back for it. Because David will break this pact, he will lose the kingdom. The fact that the Davidic dynasty was broken 2 generations after David was in part because David did not live up to this pact. Our sages say, when you make a pact with someone, so you should know that Hashem is paying attention. The famous story, the Gemara in Tanis quotes, Bor v'sira. Right, you guys know the story? There was once a girl. She was traveling. And she fell into a pit. She fell into a well. She couldn't get out. A young man came to the well and saw her stuck in the well. So she said, "Mister, save me." She looked down into the well and he said, "Will you marry me?" So she said, "Well, I'm going to die otherwise. Okay?" So he takes her out of the well and he says, "Okay, now." So she says, "What do you mean now? We're Jews, we don't do that. You want, come to my city and marry me the normal way." So he said, "Okay." So she said, "Okay, I won't marry anyone else. I'm going to wait for you. But you promise me that you're not going to marry anyone else. You're going to come get me." So he says, "Fine." So she tells him where she lives. And then she says, "But who are the witnesses that you're going to keep your promise? I'll keep my end. How do I know you'll keep your end?" So there was the pit, and there was a weasel there. So they said, "The pit and the weasel will be witness that you, the girl, won't marry anyone. You'll wait for me, and I, the guy, won't marry anyone. I'll wait for you." Okay, the girl went back to her town and told her parents that she met a guy and she's going to marry him, and now she's waiting for him to show up. Well, the years go by and the guy doesn't show up. He met another girl, married her, and had a baby. And a weasel ate up the first baby. And then they had another baby. And the second baby fell into a pit and died. So his wife said to him, "Something's unnatural here. Why are your babies dying like this?" So he said to her, "You know what, I have a confession to make." He told her the story. He said, we took as two witnesses the pit and the weasel. And now the pit and the weasel, they collected their testimony from me." And so she said to him, "Okay, then we can't continue. You promised another girl you'd marry her. Go marry her." So this story is referenced in the Talmud. The Talmud says this was a known story in folklore. Whether it happened or didn't happen, we'll assume it happened. But the Talmud references it as a known story. Everyone knew the story. This was a common story that everyone told over. It has a few different variations. If you read Rashi, if you read Tosus, if you read the Aruch, but this is more or less the story. So the Talmud says, how important is it before heaven that we keep our word? That even two witnesses like a pit and a weasel, they collected their testimony. He promised. Hashem expects him to keep it. Hashem expects us to keep our promise. Yeah, that's an important thing. Sometimes we think, what's the big deal? So,
that's for Rosh Hashanah, before you know the
Nedarim. Right? Yeah, you should still keep your word.
I mean, I'm just saying that. You're right.
Yeah. You want a quick story? Yeah? I was one day outside yeshiva. Cell phone rang. It's the police. "What do you want?" "Well, we have your passport. Come get it." I said, "That passport was stolen from me 2 years ago. I got a lot of grief because I was on my way to the airport when I discovered I didn't have that passport. I already have a new passport. I don't need it." They said, "No, we want you to identify it." I said, "You got my number. You saw my picture. You know it's me. Leave me alone. You have my passport. You could throw it out." I said, "By now, I already got a new one." They said, "No, we want you to come collect it." I said, "No, leave me alone. What do you need to waste my time? I'm going to have to come all the way to the police station. What do I need to waste my time for? You could throw it out. I'm glad you found the thief, but I'm not interested." So they said, "No, we have some other stuff of yours here. You have to come collect." I said, "Really, what do you have?" They said, "Oh, we have an old checkbook." I said, "Okay, that's an old account from 20 years ago, so the thief stole that checkbook. It's not relevant. Tear it up and throw it out. Leave me alone." They said, "No, we want you to come identify all the stuff we have of yours and collect it." I said, "What's the big deal?" They said, "Come, we want you to collect it." So I said, "Okay, I can't come today." They said, "Okay, when can you come?" I said, "Tomorrow." "Fine, we'll make up a day tomorrow." The next day I get up and I tell myself, "What am I wasting my time for? Because some clerk wants to put a check on his box and say he came and identified it. Let them throw it out. What do I have to waste my time for? None of it's relevant anymore." So I stood there at the entrance to yeshiva thinking about all the wasted hours I'm going to have to spend now traveling to Talpiot, identifying stuff that I'm going to put in the garbage a minute later anyways. What do I have to do this for? So I was about to say, okay, I'm not going. And then I decided, hey, I told him I'm going. I'm supposed to live up to my word. Maybe I shouldn't have said I'm going, but once I said I'm going, I shouldn't go back on my word. So I forced myself down to the bus stop, and I slept all the way to Talpiot, and I came in, and they say, why are you here? I said, you guys called me. You said you found some of my stolen goods. I said, okay, just a minute, we'll get to you. Okay. 5 minutes later, they take me into this room for questioning. I said, you found my stolen goods. I'm going in for questioning. So they said, we're on to you. We know the whole scam, and you might as well confess and tell the truth, because we know everything. So I said, okay, then you know something I don't know. So they said, don't make it hard on us, because then it'll be harder on you. So I said, okay, you guys are bluffing, I have nothing to tell you. They said, okay, want to play hardball? No problem. They left the room, they brought in this big Arab, and he's going to question me now. So now they're trying to scare me. What really happened? My passport and checks were stolen by a ring that was taking them and using them, and then bouncing them. And then they were, I don't know if it was identity theft, because this story goes back like 16, 17 years ago. I don't know if identity theft was so popular back then yet, but they wanted to check if I was part of the ring or not, if they really stole my passport or I'd given them my identity to do whatever they had done with it. And they played the game as though I was part of the ring. I just laughed. Right after about 5 minutes, they couldn't hold their poker face anymore. But the truth is that one of the thieves was a room down from me. He was the guy who made believe he was learning in yeshiva, but really he was spending his whole day and night robbing from places. So if one guy who made believe he was in yeshiva was a thief, I mean, Shabbos, Yom Kippur, he... but imagine had I not shown up, right? Imagine had I decided, forget it. What do I need that old passport for? What do I need that checkbook for? I don't need it. Goodbye. Leave me alone. But I only went because of this concept. As I'll tell this, you say something, try to live up to what you say. You're supposed to live up to what you said. You said yes, live up to your yes. You said no, live up to your no. So even though it was a big pain in the neck, I went. And it ended up serving me in good stead. Who knows what would have happened had I not? You know, I could imagine sitting in yeshiva and then showing up with handcuffs, right? We're on to you now. Okay? So, David will not live up to this pact. And he will pay a very hefty price for this. Yonatan keeps making him promise, you'll be good to my family, you'll be good to my family, you'll take care of them. Hashem is witness. He knows what he's doing. And ultimately, David will have many reasons to suspect that Yonatan's son, Mephibosheth, was part of a rebellion against him. David will punish this son of Yonatan and take away half his wealth. And in heaven, they're going to say, oh, that's called being faithful to Yonatan. You said you'd take care of his family. You're splitting his wealth in half. Your kingdom's going to be split in half. That's when the decree to have David's kingdom split.
I never knew the story. So David and Yonatan, they're close.
Yeah.
Very close. And Yonatan had a son.
Who David took care of. We'll see. Stick around. We're going to get there. So, David's in hiding. And Shaul sits down. And next to Shaul sits Avner. And his chief general, and next to him sits Yonatan. There's an opinion in Halacha, we don't rule like this opinion, but there's an opinion that says, we derive from here that a child shouldn't sit right next to his father. When you're having an affair and things like that, out of respect, you show you're not like right next to him. There's someone else in between. Shul had the chief of staff and then Yonatan. We don't rule like that opinion, but there is such an opinion. So Shaul looks around and he sees that David isn't there. So he figures, okay, maybe something happened. He's not pure enough to join the meal. So he didn't come. The next day, again, David's seat is empty. So Shaul asks Yonatan, he says, why didn't the son of Jesse, Ben Yishai, why didn't he come yesterday or today for the feast? So Yonatan says, he asked me permission to go to Beit Lechem to his family. He said, we have a family event. My brother ordered me to come. So please give me some time off. I should go be with my brothers. That's why he's not here by the royal feast. So Shaul gets upset and he shames Yonatan. He says, you're the son of the tumultuous, rebellious woman. Your mother was tumultuous and rebellious too. When the girls were dancing in the vineyards, and every man from the tribe of Benjamin had to choose a wife, she came and grabbed me. I was a bashful person. I didn't go out there and grab a girl. So she grabbed me. And you're just like your mother, rebellious one. I know that you're trying to help the son of Yishai. It's your shame and the shame of your mother's private parts that you came out of there. And he's talking like this in front of everyone. He says, every day that the son of Yishai is alive, then your kingdom won't be established. Summon him here because he deserves to be killed. And Yonatan answers his father and he says, why? Why should he be killed? What did he do? And Shaul picks up his spear to hit Yonatan. And Yonatan understands that his father is ready to kill David, that it's over. And Yonatan leaves the table in anger. It's Rosh Chodesh. Ordinarily, you're supposed to eat on Rosh Chodesh. You're not supposed to fast. And Yonatan does not eat that day. The next morning, Yonatan goes out into the field. And he has a young lad with him. He tells the lad, go collect the arrows I shoot. And he shoots the first arrow way past the kid. And the kid shows up and Yonatan tells him, keep going, it's way further away. He says, quick, collect it and come back. So the kid collects the arrow. And he didn't realize there was a sign there that was given to David. And Yonatan gives him his bow, his arrow. He gives him all the tools. And he sends the kid back. He says, bring it back to the city. David's been hiding. They both look around. They make sure no one's around. And David comes out of hiding. And he bows three times towards Yonatan, the prince. They hug one another. They kiss one another. And David is weeping bitterly. And Yonatan wishes David, Leich le shalom. Go, and you should find peace wherever you go. The vow that we swore should be between me and you and our children forever. Yonatan makes a critical error here. Our sages say, Gidola legima. How great is a meal when you give someone to eat. Look at what happened in our history. The Ammonites and the Moabites aren't allowed to join the Jewish people because they weren't willing to sell us food. Yisro was a part of the Jewish people because he offered Moshe Rabbeinu food. Gedola legima, the Talmud says, eating and drinking, offering someone to eat and drink, is huge. You see, we will see later on in the book of Kings, there was a false prophet. But he offered people to eat and drink. So he ultimately got true prophecy. There was a man named Micha. You remember we learned about it. There was an idol in Micha's house, right? But Micha ultimately, his house wasn't destroyed. His idol was stolen, but his house wasn't destroyed. Why? Because Micha would offer people free food. Chazal say giving people to eat and drink is huge in heaven. Hashem loves it when people give other people to eat and drink. And Yonatan makes that mistake over here. He should have brought food and drink for David, and he didn't. And David is ravenous. He's had 3 days of not eating. He's been in hiding. He hasn't had any normal food. Now, it's not only that. Psychologically, David is even more ravenous. If we were to sit here and not eat for the next hour, you could handle it. But if I said, no one's allowed to eat for the next hour, you'd feel hungrier. The second people diet, they have a harder time controlling their eating. Because once I'm not allowed to eat that, then it becomes much harder. Then I want it more. If you decide I'm not having any sugar anymore, suddenly you'll want sugar more. The idea that I can't have something makes me want to have it more. The idea that David now knows he can't enter any city normally, he can't have any normal food. The pressure David is under, Chazal say, Achazo bulmus, that David HaMelech entered a state of temporary insanity. David reached a point where he was so ravenous for food that his sanity was in question. And David realized that. He realized he was losing it. The halacha says if a person feels like they're so hungry they're going to lose it, they could eat anything in sight. They could eat pork, they could eat anything on Yom Kippur, anything. There is a state, the Gemara calls it bulmus, where a person feels like they're going to lose it out of the feeling of hunger. And Chazal say, if a person suspects they're going to lose it, they're going to lose their sanity, then they have to be mechalel Shabbos, they have to be mechalel Yom Kippur, they have to make sure to eat. David realizes he's about to lose it out of his hunger. And we will see in a few minutes what David does to try and get food, and there are grave consequences. And our sages fault Yonatan with this. So, in Europe, there was a common thing that when people would come to your house as a guest, you'd give them food for the road. Once upon a time, this was common, that when people left your house, they left you with food. You'd give them a care package. I'm a believer in doing that. People come to your house, you have guests, sometimes it's young men or women, people who are bachelors or divorced. They don't have normal meals. Give them good food. Remember the story of Yonatan. Yonatan will, in this mistake, will cause the demise of a whole city. He will cause his own father's demise, ultimately. Yonatan made one little mistake. He didn't bring David a care package. So in life, these little care packages matter big time. You have a friend who's going off to the airport, make sure you send them with something. A pack of wafers, a sandwich. When we used to live in the neighborhood, we'd sometimes have students over their last night before they went off on a plane. Those students who flew to their parents or something. So very often students would come to us. So they'd not only dinner, we'd also make them a few sandwiches to take for the road. Chazal say, Gedola legima. It's very important, those little care packages you give people when they come. Right now, many of you don't yet have your homes, but one day you will have homes. So remember this, when you have yeshiva guys over, when you have bachelors over, when people need this, it's a world of a difference. Sometimes people don't know how to make food for themselves. And when you give them some leftover homemade kugel, you give them some leftovers from the meal. I remember once we had a young couple that both made Aliyah. And at the end of the meal, I said to my wife, let's offer them some food. So my wife said, aren't you scared it's going to embarrass them? Saying, isn't it embarrassing to be offered food? I said, you're probably right, but I'm going to take the risk. I'll make up a story. So I said to the couple, I said, look, we overbought for Pesach, and the food isn't going to last. Let me bring a few bags, and you guys see what you guys want to take with you. And much to my surprise, they filled garbage bags filled with food. Like they took fruits and kugels and matzah, and they walked out like with a suitcase and a half worth of food. And after they left, I realized they needed it. Meaning I made up a story and I offered it to them. I thought they'd take one thing, two things. I wasn't prepared for like two garbage bags worth. They took as much as they could physically carry. They stopped when it became too heavy. And I know this couple till today. Today, Baruch Hashem, they're better off financially. But then they needed it. That was a point in their life where they needed it. We don't know where people are. To offer, you find a good story. You say, look, it's something which we should restart. Once upon a time, this was... everyone did this. You came to someone's house when you left. Very often, they'd give you a package with you. Some of the leftover foods. I think it's a good thing to start again. I think that people who don't need it shouldn't take it. Saying, don't take advantage of your host, and if it's not offered, so I don't think a person should ask unless they're in dire need. However, when you're running the house, it's a very nice element of Achnasat Orchim to find a way to send the person off with a care package. When I was in yeshiva, we never had fruits. They didn't bring fruits to yeshiva. I remember there were people who I went to their house before I'd leave. They'd slice two apples and give me sliced apples. When I went to yeshiva, it was like they gave me Gan Eden. Because we didn't have fruits in yeshiva. And as a bachelor, you don't think you should maybe go out and buy a few apples before Shabbos. I don't know why, but... Back to our Navi. So, David's on the run. And he comes to the holiest city, to Nov, which is right now the place where the Mishkan is situated. And he comes to Achimelech, the Kohen Gadol. And Achimelech rushes out to David. He's unwitting. He doesn't know what's really going on. He says to David, what's wrong? Why are you here alone without your men? Where are your soldiers? And David says to Achimelech, I'm on a secret mission. And the king told me, no one should know what's going on here. I don't want anyone to know where you're going or where your men are going. And so I hid my soldiers. I'm not allowed to tell you where. But tell me, I need 5 loaves of bread. David is doing everything he can to contain himself from going mad at this moment. He hasn't eaten in 3 days. And the Achimelech tells him, you know, the only bread I have is the holy bread, the show bread. Are your men pure? Maybe we should give them something else. David says, no, sure, everyone's pure. My whole camp, all my men are pure. Everyone can eat it. So the Kohen gives him, and David says to him, you know, I need a weapon. I was in such a rush when the king sent me. I don't have my weapons with me. What do you have? So Achimelech tells him, I have the sword of Goliath, which you captured. You left it here so that people should see the great miracle. I don't have any other weapons here. So David says, okay, give it to me. It's the best sword there is. And David is on his way out. The only problem is there was a man there. There was a man who lived in Edomite territory. His name was Doeg. Remember? He was David's nemesis from day one. And Doeg had come there to pray, to be a holy person, to be alone. We go to the Kotel sometimes, to daven, to focus ourselves on our service of Hashem. So Doeg was there to do his bodedus, to be alone, to think about how he's supposed to be a better person, to think about how he's supposed to serve Hashem. And Doeg will tell Shaul what just happened. He will present the story in a very negative way, and Shaul will order Doeg to kill the whole city of Nob. And all of this plays itself out. Firstly, our sages trace it back to Yonatan forgetting to give David something to eat. Should have brought him some food. So David runs, and he decides he has to enter enemy territory to try and protect himself from Shaul. So he enters Philistine territory, the city of Gath. And the king Achish, his men, they take David and they bring him before Achish. Now David had thought he could live in Philistine territory quietly, but he hears Achish men telling him, you know, that's the David that people sing about, that he kills tens of thousands of Philistines. So they put David in jail, and they wait for Achish to come. Now David earlier had seen a man who was insane. He had seen a person with saliva dripping down his mouth and going and scratching walls. And he had prayed to Hashem and he said, Ribon Shalom, why did you create insanity in this world? Here he had fought insanity. Remember, he had fought to get food. He's doing everything to retain his sanity. And he asks the Ribon Shalom, he says, why did you create such a thing in the world? And the Ribon Shalom said to him, David, you will see a time will come and you will need that insanity. You will see it's a tool, and there are times where it's necessary in the world. The Medrash says that when Achish was summoned to prison to see David, so David started having saliva dripping down his mouth and scratching the walls, and he started behaving insane. And when Achish came, so Achish had a problem. His own wife and daughter had gone mad. And inside the house, they would drive him crazy. He'd walk into the house, they'd start running after him and hitting him. And so he said to his soldiers, he said, is there a shortage of crazy people in my house? What'd you bring him here for? So get him out of here. This isn't the David you think it is. So they open the prison and they tell him to leave. So David runs inside and holds on to the bars and says, I'm not going anywhere. So he played it mad. This is the Medrash. But I wonder what the Medrash is really telling us. I wonder if David was able to tap into insanity for those moments. I wonder if David was playing it all the time. Or David, what did Hashem mean? You'll see that this is a necessary thing in this world, insanity. There are people who escape the pain in their life by becoming insane. Insanity is something which people actually is an escape for some people. There are people whose life is so frustrating and so painful that they escape life by becoming insane, and you can't pull them out. I'm not saying any of us should do that or should opt for that. But I always wondered, what was the question and what was the answer? David said, Ribbono Shel Olam, why did you create it? And the Ribbono Shel Olam said, you will see that you will need it too. Does that mean that here David was actually, he lost his sanity in those moments of fear by Achish? Or the way they taught us as children that he faked insanity? I'm not sure what the Medrash means to tell us. Yeah. Right. So all kings of Plishtim were called Avimelech. So it's the same Achish and Avimelech, it's the same king. Yeah. Yeah. What I'm telling you now is in the Tosus Rid. He says that his real name was Achish, but all Philistine kings were called Avimelech, so he was also called Avimelech. David escapes to a place called Me'arat Adulam, the cave of Adulam. His family comes to him, and he starts having this band of people. Whoever's embittered, whoever is bankrupt, whoever has to escape the troubles of life joins David. He has a band of 400 men and his family. He travels to Moabite territory. So he crosses the Jordan, he leaves Israel into Moabite territory on the east. If we look at our map, so we see Moab is right here, southeast. Okay? So Moab is adjacent to the tribe of Yehuda, right? In Judean territory, he's safer from Shaul. Initially, Me'arat Adulam, he goes to Judean territory, and then he decides he has to travel further away to Moabite territory, eastward. Okay? And he asks the Moabite king, let me entrust my family with you, my father, my mother. Let me entrust them until I know what's going on. And the Moabite king agrees. And David leaves. And so long as David is nearby in a place called Mitzudah, right near Moabite territory, so everything's okay. And the second David distances himself further from there, so then the Moabite king executes his whole family. His father, his mother, his brothers. There is one man, Nachash HaAmoni, who will later on become the king of Ammon. And he conceals one of his family. He conceals one member. But everyone else was killed. And that's why later on, David will feel a debt of gratitude to Nachash. It will cause David to err, but he will feel a debt of gratitude because he saved the one member of his family. So God, the prophet, tells David, travel into Judean territory. And when David listens to God, the prophet, that's when his family is executed. He travels into Judean territory.
Was it David's family?
Correct. David's family was all killed. Now David's all alone in the world. His family's dead, murdered by the Moabite king.
Yes,
Yishai and his wife and all his brothers. Yes, correct. David's whole family was just killed.
In Moabite
territory, right? He took all of them out into Moabite territory. He told the king of He told the king of Moab, "Watch over my family till I know what's going on in my life."
And he
executed all of them
because he trusted him.
David trusted him.
And it's happened many times in history. I was like, trusting on folks, going, against us. There's a lesson.
I'll just tell us the fact. And now the chase begins. Shaul wants David dead. Shaul heard that David is now being spotted in Judean territory. Shaul hears that David has an army with him. And Shaul is sitting on the hilltop under a tree. He has his spear. all his servants are around him. And Shaul says to them, listen here, sons of Benjamin, you my relatives, you all must be anticipating the gifts that the son of Ishai will give you, fields and vineyards. You're all waiting to see yourselves in appointments of leadership, generals, because you're all obviously part of this rebellion. None of you thought it was a good idea to tell me that my son had made a pact with the son of Ishai. None of you thought you should tell me that my son set up my enemy to ambush me. So he's applying pressure on his servants. As I'll say, stay away from leadership. Stay away from rulers. They will pressure you, and they will cause you to transgress your own scruples, your own values. You will find yourself doing things that you wouldn't do otherwise because of that pressure. In that sense, Chazal recommended highly to retain our own independence. It seems like when you're close to someone who's wealthy, who has power, you think you'll have more independence. Chazal say you'll have less. Chazal say, stay away. Stay away from the leaders, because in the end, people find themselves losing their fear of heaven and living with the fear of the rulers they are with. And so Doeg makes the fateful error for which our sages say he lost all portion in the world to come. He is one of the people the Mishnah in Tractate Sanhedrin says has no portion in the world to come. And he now tells Shaul, I saw the son of Yishai coming to Nov, and I saw he asked Achimelech to ask Hashem on his behalf, and he did. And then I saw him giving him food, and he gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. And so Shaul summons Achimelech and his whole family, all the Kohanim from Nov, and they all come before the king. And we'll pick up here, Bezat Hashem, next week.